Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Kids, do you like professional wrestling? Well, we like professional wrestling. I'm a professional. This week in the news, WWE and TNA make a deal in the lazy river of wrestling criticism. This is off the rails already. The era of sports pententainment begins. Hat tip to Warren Hayes for that pun that I never saw coming. And Invader Club, it's my pick this week. Ayumi Kurihara and Kana versus Mako Satomura and Ayako Hamada. I loved it, but this is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. He is Chris Novembrino. We have some heavy hitters in the RIP section today, Chris. We have WWE Hall of Famer Bob Uecker, which we can wait for the wrestling to get. We have music legend Sam Moore of Sam and Dave and David Lynch. Sam and Dave are my jam. My dad got me hooked on them as a kid, and then, of course, I watched the Blues Brothers for the first time, and I was hooked. A staple of Stax Volt 1960s soul, Hold On, I'm Coming, Soul Man, I Thank You, all sorts of different hits. I am a huge, huge fan of one Sam Moore. He passed in his 90s. I'm admittedly not a David Lynch fan. I'm a film nerd, but David Lynch absolutely did nothing for me in terms of films and stuff. I just always just found him weird. Weird connection, not quite personal, but he used to hang out in my hometown when I was a teenager.
Oh.
Because he was filming this movie called Zelly and Me, I think is the name of it. And they were looking for a post-World War II town type thing, and there's a little borough in Newport News called Hilton Village, and there's a diner there called the Blue Star Diner, and he was dating Isabella Rossellini at the time, And so, like, 1986, 1987, David Lynch and Isabella Rossellini are just hanging out in Newport News. And it was just the oddest thing. My dad was like, I'm going to go meet him so I can talk to him about Dune. I'm like, Dad, I don't think they're going to let you talk to him about Dune, but David Lynch seems like the kind of guy who would let you talk to him
He probably, if you had something insightful to say about the text that was interesting and new to him, he'd be all over it.
Yeah, I was just like, well, yeah, and the Blue Star Diner is like, it's closed now, but it was just straight out like the 1940s. I mean, it was so...
Well, that would have been exactly his jam.
So though. Perfect. He was only acting in this one. He wasn't directing it.
I know, but this still would have been precisely his jam. And these type of places.
I don't know if I have any friends who ran into him. That's the weird thing, is you think I'd know somebody who did, and I haven't heard any of those stories, but knowing my brother, he probably was just like, yeah, I was down playing basketball and David Lynch showed up and shot some J's, because he always seems to run into people. Bob Uecker is phenomenal. WWE Hall of Famer. He was on a couple of WrestleManias. Oddly enough, listening to wrestling people talk about him, they forget because I guess it's the age difference. He used to be like the most frequent guest on Johnny Carson back in the day, and that's where he really got his reputation, because he was this self-deprecating baseball player who played on a couple of really good teams, but he wasn't really good on them. And then he translated that quick wit and self-deprecation both into being the Milwaukee Brewers play-by-play guy, but also into like Miller Lite ads and things of that nature. And that's how he got Mr. Belvedere. He had a sitcom for like 5 or 6 years on ABC. You can't go wrong with that. Just hilarious. If you Google like the Norm Macdonald stories about being with Bob Uecker, he's famous for using the cough button to just say horrible, nasty things while at the same time calling the game. And he just had done it for an art form. And also, of course, Harry Doyle from the Major League movies, if you saw those. Any thoughts on Bob Uecker, Chris?
Well, I wanted to circle
or
back.
Or Sam Moore or David Lynch.
David Lynch.
Go for it.
You know, Twin Peaks is a text that took me a long time to get into. I watched it the first time back in college, and then I had to give it another shot here about maybe 5-10 years ago to really get what Lynch was throwing down in Twin Peaks. And it's one of these things that went from my initial impression of it's strange for the sake of being strange, because Lynch is a strange guy and
yes,
he likes being strange, to me actually kind of like what I realize now is that Lynch is usually saying something very heartfelt and precise, and that level of directness is not a comfortable place for him, so it has to always be veiled. Twin Peaks is really about American culture's fascination with violence, murder, and how we lose sight of the Laura Palmers in this story, because we're always so fascinated in the Bobs. Bob is the murdering entity. We're always so fascinated about what makes Bob Bob that we lose a sense of human tragedy to individualized murder. I think maybe another quote that puts this into relief is the Stalin quote of "One death is a tragedy, 1,000 deaths is a statistic." And Lynch he's really exploring that in Twin Peaks and in revisiting Laura Palmer and stuff. And it took me a very long time to get what he was doing. And it makes perfect sense that especially like American TV culture at that point was not ready to remotely go with where he was trying to go with Twin Peaks, because, you know, one of the problems with Twin Peaks in its initial airing was everyone was so obsessed with the mystery.
Right.
Well, who did kill Laura Palmer? Who did? And what Dave is sort of saying is, no. It's not who killed Laura Palmer. You should be asking, who was Laura Palmer? Laura Palmer was a young person with hopes and dreams and stuff, and that's the question we should always be asking in these tragedies.
Yeah, and that doesn't lend itself to television narrative structure, because people want people want the bad guy at the end of the hour in Law and Order type style. I kind of view him as the, like, I watched Blue Velvet And it was like, okay, that's an, what was the one, Lost Highway with Robert Blake? I think I walked out of that one because I was just like, nope, I'm out of here. But he's kind of like the opposite side of the coin to me of the, you know, Guillermo del Toro's and the Yorgos Lanthimos's, who want to say these really deep things in their highly stylized weirdness kind of a stuff. And it's not that he's not saying something. It's that it's not... He's not beating you over the head with something like Poor Things, which is just a garbage movie. I'm sorry. It's a garbage movie that has a lot of in-your-face symbolism and stuff like that. He wasn't an in-your-face symbolism type guy. He was a little bit
right.
Spiritual, and I wouldn't even go hippy-dippy necessarily, but, you know, it's just, you know, and he was, like, willing to try things, and I don't like most of the stuff I've seen David Lynch in is stuff he's acted in. Like there's an episode of Louie where he gives him the secrets of show business that are hilarious and stuff. Like
oh,
that.
Hey, no, that
or he's in the Fablemans.
His appearance on Louie's great. He's so funny.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's what I like the David Lynch is though strange is not so pretentious that he's saying nothing with it. And I also think that, in his directing and his directing style, that people take a lot from the way Lynch shoots things. And so he always places a very high premium on the visual quality of the movie and the visual quality of the story. And that's important. That's as important as anything with a director. A director really controls the visuals of the story less than the screenplay.
And of course, F. Heineken, Pabst Blue Ribbon. let's get to the news. WWE and TNA Wrestling have struck a multi-year partnership that will see TNA pro wrestlers regularly appear on NXT programming and vice versa, WWE told ESPN on Thursday. I believe Genesis is in Dallas this weekend, and then Raw is on Monday. And it is the beginning of the Royal Rumble, so you might see some crossover there as well. But I am here to celebrate that people have finally kind of not put this on a pedestal and realize that WWE and TNA are just kind of friends with benefits and using each other, as opposed to, say, the AEW partnerships, which were always like kind of, well, now both can grow and be happy and have a marriage. No, look, this is... TNA has never aspired to me to be more than what it is, at least in the latter years, where it's there for tax write-offs and to break even and give people jobs. And I'm cool with that. And WWE is going to poach the hell out of anybody that they see that they can make any money with.
Use TNA to get placeholder contracts on guys they might be interested in the future so that AEW doesn't get one on, too.
That's very true. And also, you know... I haven't seen a lot of it, but what I've seen of when they send some of these greener kids over to TNA, they're actually doing okay. Like, I believe Carmen Petrovich went over there. Is that the name? Did I get that right?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you got it right, yeah.
Okay, and then, you know, a few others in their women's division. Like, the women's division, they have veterans over there that are employed, and they can work with the young kids there, too. And, of course, you know, Joe Hendry and Jordan Grace are basically earmarked for WWE at this point. I see a lot of people complaining about, but the people who complain about are mostly the AEW fans who don't want WWE to have nice things. So, I mean, I'm fairly cool with it. Do you have any thoughts?
No, I think the TNA relationship is generative. I don't care if TNA is partnered with AEW or WWE, it makes me know never mind because this is not a team sport for me.
Right.
I'm not like, woo, WWE. I mean, from my standpoint, the TNA relationship has been generative with NXT. Some of the better NXT television has involved, in the last year, has involved working in some of the TNA talents. I think that having this sort of standing contract opens up the potential somewhere down the line for like a brand war sort of angle. That could be fun. Now that you've got it actually kind of formalized and set up, you could do an invasion. NXT invades TNA.
Oh,
TNA.
God, I hope not.
I mean, I could certainly see NXT invading TNA.
Yeah, I could too. Just to give them a bit of a rub. If I'm a woman on that NXT roster, I am begging you to go to TNA so I can pick the brain of Gail Kim.
Yeah.
I mean, because she knows main roster thoughts. She was there when it was at some of its worst, and she's a hell of a worker. I mean, it's not that the coaches at NXT are bad. It's just that, hey, here's someone new who knows what the hell it's all about, and just let me be in a room with them for a half hour and ask some questions and stuff. I think that would be a magical opportunity that people should partake in. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. We also saw Masha Slamovich, TNA. I believe she's the Knockouts champion on this week's NXT. So yeah, that looks to be active and somewhat thriving already. So we'll see what happens with that. Action Bronson went on Ariel Helwani's show and talked about his AEW time there. And this is a quote. "You know what they do. They don't call you back. I never got called back. There was an angle there. I'm ready right now. I'm ready for whoever." Asked if he liked it, quote, "Actually, no, I enjoy the act. I don't like, the backstage is weird over there. It's just weird. It was like everyone's clicky. You can tell it was weird vibes," he explained. He also intimated he would wrestle for WWE and mentioned fellow musician and occasional WWE wrestler Bad Bunny as an opponent. And I'm going to tie this in with another rumor that is out there. Apparently, Wrestle Purist possibly saying that Swerve isn't getting his win back against Bobby Lashley anytime soon, citing creative control or concerns or what have you. You can follow the leak from where that came from, possibly. But I don't understand how they have not gotten... There's something about this AEW roster where they are full hell-bent on being wrestling for wrestlers, and, you know, everybody likes the people that they're with, and Tony Khan isn't a strong hand. Because you could get rid of all these issues with leaks and people not feeling comfortable and stuff by being in control.
Management. It's been true since Phil Brooks. Nothing has changed. And if anything, watching as things elapse in the wake of Phil Brooks leaving and people pointing fingers every which way, the people who said that Tony has issues managing look really vindicated.
I'm going to add a third thing, because apparently Will Ospreay came out to Fightful and was really kind of cheerleading his, hey, I put over Swerve so that the narrative that he was a transitional champ wouldn't be out there, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm just like, you guys are all appealing to the wrong people. And that's my big, big picture issue here is, how do I put this? Newsletter readers and message board participants and guys who rank matches with star ratings so that they could have a top 10 at the end of the year and thoroughly do all that.
They're the only people who use the phrase transitional champion for a lot of wrestling fans. That's a phrase that they don't even really know what it means.
That is the point. Stop making this a record store for record store employees.
It's Empire Records, only done at a wrestling level.
Yes, or I was thinking High Fidelity. We're all trying to appeal to the Jack Black and the other dude, the guy who likes the weepy emo crap. And we're just, none of that crap matters, man. It matters if you can talk, if you have a heated feud, and you can build it into a great match. That's all that matters here. Yeah. Instead of this, and the Hangman quote still gets at me, because I understand, again, I was team Phil Brooks a little bit, only because he did it the wrong way, but it's like, yes, listen to your veterans. I know how to do this, whatever. It's like, dude, just even placate them and humor them for a while if they're trying to tell you how to get over or something. There's this weird theater camp vibe to AEW, and
I gotta tell you, man, the fact that it's coming from Action Bronson, who is not someone who's in the bubble at all, and is it's more damning coming from a guy who's not really in the business. And it's just like, yeah, I went back to, you know, it'd be like, go, you know, someone who's not, a, you know, working in a restaurant, going back to the kitchen and giving a report on what's going down in the kitchen. Oh, damn. I guess I got to take that a little more seriously because this is a guy who's not even in the business.
Well, it's weird because Action Bronson has actual celebrity in some way. Right. And if he were in WWE, they would be flating him backstage and, you know, hyping all this other stuff. And then you go into AEW and it's middle school cafeteria crap. I don't know who to sit with because nobody will talk to me because I'm just a guy in the music business, and I'm not an actual worker. So
I know. What a damning critique that none of these doofuses backstage looked at Action Bronson, who's clearly here and interested in doing some business in wrestling, and went up to him and were like, hey, so what are you thinking in terms of an angle? Let's talk about it.
Well, we don't know they didn't do that, but at the same time.
Well, look, he definitely left with the impression that he was not welcomed or encouraged.
If you leave
so
this
I would
that
say
that
if,
yeah.
that if that if that had happened, he probably wouldn't leave with this impression that he's unwanted.
And how about some communication?
It really should have been, God damn, I went to go and work at AEW, and all these guys were just tripping all over themselves.
Yes. They were
you'll hit me in the face with a pie. Yeah. You'll kick me in the nuts. You'll hit me in the face with a pie. You know, like, they're all pitching me all sorts of things I could do to them.
Yeah, you hear these stories a little bit about Saturday Night Live occasionally, too, where it's just like, you know, sometimes the star comes in with a whole bunch of ideas and then you hear the cast just crapping on him. I'm like, dude, they're trying to help you. They want to be with you. What are you doing trashing this guy in the media or whatnot, even if his ideas are bad?
Although, you know, the AEW locker room sounds a lot like Steven Seagal the time he came to work for Saturday Night Live. doesn't want to be involved with anyone, needs to get his own shit in.
I would never do that.
Well, I don't do that.
Yeah, I just and Tony Khan, I mean, God, the communication is legendary, and I'm like mad every time I hear about somebody wasn't called back or their calls weren't returned or the schedule, like Tully Blanchard or who is it, Big Swole or now Action Bronson. It's like, I understand you want to avoid conflict. Just want people to be happy. And maybe if we don't call them back, they'll figure out they got fired. So we put them in this cubicle down here with his stapler to figure things out on his own and let nature take its course. No, you know, let's not give people double duty. Let's just hire a communications team with that big TV money. And form a bureaucracy in some respect. And as much as I hate bureaucracies, they do much better than this as opposed to
he's such a dope. He could be just seen as a capable owner. But instead, by insisting on wearing the manager management hat, the booker hat, instead what we see is an incapable man on a regular basis doing all these other things with a simple deprioritizing of himself as the executor, he could actually come off as a more competent executive. That's the actual irony here.
Yeah, it's kind of like the sports analogy I will use is when Arthur Blank of the Falcons always goes down to the field before wins and stuff. You know, it's like, dude, you own the team. All right, that and I get it. You want to be celebratory in there, but they're the ones doing the work. Let them have them.
Or Jerry Jones getting way too involved in the day-to-day at the expense of the Cowboys. Yeah. You know, owners should own.
Although he is general manager, so.
Yeah, I know. But owners should own.
I agree.
And
workers should work.
Workers should work and managers should manage.
Yeah.
But when owners try to manage, that becomes a problem. When managers leave their workers to manage themselves, that becomes a problem. When managers have to do the work because their employees aren't doing the work, that becomes a problem. Like, everyone's got lanes.
I did not take a screenshot of this tweet, so I'm going to try and find it. But Corey Graves, here it is, in a now deleted tweet. kind of not happy with his position in commentary. Imagine chasing your dream, then being told, not deciding that you're no longer physically able to do it, and then, you know, and then of course celebrities come in and take your job and blah 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 blah. And you're not famous enough to do it, et cetera, et cetera. Taking off NXT this week.
What a moron! What a thin-skinned moron! He's unbelievably talented. I think he got done dirty.
I think he got done dirty too. I am of the opinion. Yeah, sure, it could be a work for a Pat McAfee match somewhere. I am gonna say this though. Corey Graves also knows that this is what WWE does with its commentary teams, especially when McAfee wants to come back and start calling wrestling. He's only going to talk with Michael Cole. He's not going to join with anybody else. And then he's going to leave during football season. And that's the price you pay for celebrity. Yes, I know it's not fair. I know he's a part-timer. I get all that. But the answer to your question is money. And more people want to watch Pat McAfee than you, unfortunately. And if this is real, I don't know if it's real yet. I think he's better than Wade Barrett. I do. Wade Barrett comes off a little bit try hard for me. I don't think Wade Barrett's bad. I wouldn't even mind a 3-person booth with Corey and Wade and stuff like that.
No. I mean, if anything, I think part of the frustration, if this is real frustration, has to be going from Raw to babysitting Booker T with Vic Joseph and being confused by Booker T for Vic Joseph on air. Like this guy, Corey Graves, you gotta, I mean, even if you like Booker as a person, you have to hate the fact that this guy is so much less competent than you.
Yes, and you have to use that as leverage for a pay bump when I'm going
it's
down
Homer
there.
It's Homer Simpson, Frank Grimes energy, so
yes.
Bad.
Yes. God. Now I need Corey Graves as NXT Frank Grimes. Look at him. He doesn't even watch the product.
He doesn't know what that move is, and he used to wrestle.
He's just being a pervy creep about Stephanie.
Every
McCare.
Single woman. Yeah, I know. Good Lord. Any Latina, who walks through that curtain, he says something absolutely despicable, sexist, and questionably racist.
Please, if somebody here is listening, I can get this to Corey Graves. Corey Graves doing a Frank Grimes gimmick in NXT about Booker T would be the, oh, God.
Oh, so we're back to the racist perversion, huh, Book?
Oh my god, all right, look, you're over this thing.
All right, we're gonna get Book a wet towel for his crotch area, and we're gonna keep calling this match now.
Yes. God. And then all Vic has to do is lay back in his chair, put his hands behind his head, and go, thank you.
Booker.
He can actually do that with McAfee if he wanted to, too.
Booker is an utter blight on that show right now. And there have been times where his chaotic brand of commentary has been amusing to me, but like right now, he is such a constant negative on that show all the time.
Yes, I can't. I actually mute the show when I watch it, because I just can't take him anymore. It's ridiculous.
Oh, he's at work. Otherwise, I would have Oliver come in here and give us our long-awaited impersonation.
Oh, yes, you teased it, and now you can't pay off.
Well, no, he's at work. I drove him to work. He's
call
working.
Him.
proud of my boy I am. He's at work. No, we'll get him on here one of these days, though.
Oh, I'm tweeting that right now. Give Corey Graves... Okay, Janelle Grant has been given until, or her team, not her personally, but her attorneys have been given until January 31st to argue for amending the lawsuit against Vince McMahon, WWE, and John Laurinaitis. Grant's team recently filed a request for a status conference, which was rejected. New judge on the case, old judge died. My favorite line in this week's Observer was, new judge has been replaced, possibly for a health issue. this judge died on 1/15. Yes, Dave, it's because of a health issue that was there. But yeah, Vince and John Laurinaitis' team are once again going to argue that all issues concerning this case must be argued in as arbitration. And I think the judge is just trying to get all the P's and Q's dotted and crossed and whatnot. And then we're just going to decide, does this go to arbitration or does this not? And our long national nightmare will be over.
Yeah. You know, it's.
By the way, Vince is building his team for his new entertainment venture.
Right, right. I think the most nauseating thing from this week is just like, all of the capital B, capital M bad men rallying around Vince in the wake of whatever news came out in the last 6-7 days that supposedly helps his case, basically going, so good that Vince McMahon has this behind him. So good that, you know, we still have Vince around. It's like, it's nauseating.
Well, that's a real positive.
What?
I said, boy, that's a real positive.
Yeah.
And that guy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and of course, one of them was like a Saudi company or like a Saudi businessman.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm like, all right, great. Well, at least Vince has found his people.
Let's say Dorado appears to be back with the company. He was on an NXT house show this week.
Oh.
That's just, I don't know, man. Do we need more luchadors?
Lindsay, if you remember, actually has very good English.
So yes, he's very good at that.
Yeah, he is a talented wrestler who could theoretically rebrand into a character because his English is good enough that he could carry something.
You know, that would be my choice here.
Yeah, that would be my choice. I wouldn't bring him back.
Don't even bring him as Lindsay Dorado. Make him like an anti-Axiom.
Or anti-Axiom. That'd be cool.
In NXT.
Mm-hmm.
And have him find a doppelganger for Nathan Frazier and just do bangers. I'm here for that.
Oh, that would be awesome. A heel, like, cruiserweight assassin team.
Yes.
That would actually be really cool. You could see them, like,
if Leo Rush were available, I'd bring him in, but he's making.
I would be so in for this. Like, these two lightweight, cocky dudes beating down guys like Hank and Tank or OTM, guys who should theoretically be beating them. These guys are just so technically proficient.
Yes.
And so mobile that
I die for that.
And they're even playing with their food a little bit. Like, they actually seem to be delighting in how they're like taking advantage of bigger dudes. I'd be into that.
That'd be a fresh angle. They'd be like, you know, like basically fighter pilots, you know, the cocksure, but they do the high fly. I mean, we've been talking about that for various people for years, though. I mean, and they never do it because, of course, of the size difference. You know, who could believe that a small guy could beat up a big guy? I could if they're proficient enough.
Especially in a, while this might work a little less well one-on-one, in a tag scenario where you get over that these guys are just the peak of tag team synergy.
Yes.
And what they do is they pick apart the other guy. I mean, you can protect the bigger
teams. Like a Midnight Express type thing.
You can protect the bigger teams by, like, having, you know, early in the match, they work an injury angle on one of the guys.
Yes.
So they pull out, you know, then it's the other guy, and he's in a two-on-one situation, and he's fighting, but they're still just playing with their food because it's two-on-one now.
I'll do it for our news segment. Now for the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we had time for, whatever we watched, we'll talk about this week. I think probably the main segment coming out of this week was, yes, it was the debut of one Penta onto WWE television. The snark is over for Shake Them Ropes, who always would call him Sports Entertainment Penta. Now he is Sports Entertainment Penta. And he did all of the Penta things you would expect. It was just, they do this angle with Chad Gable to introduce him. And I get it, but I don't want to see a 20-minute match on a debut. I don't want to hear how great this guy is. I want to see how great he is on his debut.
It's a real quandary because because Chad Gable gave him an excellent match.
Yes, it was a great match. Don't get me wrong about that. Yeah,
I'm kind of with you. What I want to see with Penta in his debut, this is going to sound very chalk for Chris, but this is just how I feel. I want to see him in there with three guys who are terrified of him.
Yes.
That this guy goes zero fear, and these three dudes are trembling, even though they have the numbers advantage, because they're scared of what this man's going to do to them.
Give me the
aura. I want Penn to toy with them. I want him to play with his food.
Yes, give me the aura. Don't give me the wrestling technical skills, and don't give me the my joke this week was that him and Tama Tonga are going to do like a 2-minute prance off in the Royal Rumble before somebody comes out doing that thing. You introduce him, he kills these three guys, you get the aura that you're trying to put across to him, and you here's his signature move, here's his finisher. Michael Cole can give you the biography. Pat McAfee can be wowed because he watches wrestling like a 6-year-old child in the color desk, and that's all you need to do. And then next week, check it. I don't want these dang luchadors in my company. I'll fight him, and then you can have the good match. I do give points to Penta for doing just the most oversold scream when they do the leg around the post. He almost did a Wilhelm scream.
Well, okay, at least he sold.
At least he sold for somebody.
Yeah, at least he sold for somebody. Yeah, come on, Jeff. What do you want? Pick a lane. Choose an adventure.
I will also just because WWE did it wrong, so did AEW with Megan Bain, who looked like $1 million in that women's casino gauntlet, looked like the biggest star in that damn thing, and nobody knew who the hell Megan Bain was unless you'd paid attention to the indies and stuff. But she looked better than any AEW woman on there in terms of both being in shape and the aura that she brought. I am all about aura in my professional wrestling. I don't care about your work rate. I don't. I just want to see fights and stars and people who are badder than I am. I don't get this. I would have, like, Lucha Underground did the greatest job on Penta. I'm sorry. I mean, would you agree with that, Chris?
People are trying to reinvent the wheel here. They did it 13 years ago on Lucha Underground.
They mentioned Lucha Underground on the broadcast.
I thought that was interesting, too. I wonder if they're maybe thinking about buying whatever the catalog is for that.
I don't think it matters. I think they just wanted to mention everything except AEW.
AEW, yeah. Basically show that AEW's on an island.
What they wanted to say was he was a star in other places, but we're not going to mention our
AEW
major competitor, et cetera. And, you know, look, it's fine. A lot of the more cynical broadcasters in wrestling podcasting are going, well, he'll cool off after 2 weeks, and then they'll bring in his brother, and then they'll reheat them as a tag team. I get that thinking. But from what I've heard from people who, I have some normie friends in NorCal who went to the show, and at least one of the sons was dying to get some of that Penta stuff.
Yeah.
They may have a merchandise machine on their hands.
I think so, too, and it's like, you know, everyone keeps going, oh, he's got the pair with Phoenix. I mean, I'm sure he's going to want to tag with his brother eventually, but Penta could tag with Nakamura, and that would be a fun tag team.
That'd be a good match, too.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of different solo programs that Penta could have right now. They could absolutely focus in on character work and characterization, put him into the mix of Karrion Kross.
Karrion Kross was the guy I was thinking of, and he has that Lucha Underground experience too. So it's one of those things where if you make him just a force of nature to be reckoned with, eventually one of the other forces will have to come into contact with him.
Was Karrion Kross the leader of the Rabbit Tribe?
Wasn't that Paul London?
Oh yeah, it was Paul London. Was he part of it though, or something?
I think so. I will. I'll look that up, but
I definitely remember Paul London. Yeah, but you keep going.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things where I just kind of want.
Yeah, he was the White Rabbit.
I want him. Yeah, I want to keep him away from the.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the scripted lucha of Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, I honor their legacies all time, and then never getting over on your own.
Right. I think in particular, the fact that we invoke Eddie and yet never see Eddie on WWE television, to the point where I think there are viewers who know the name Eddie Guerrero and don't know what he looks like.
It's hard to book him these days, Chris.
Well, I'm aware that he's no longer taking calls. Jeff, stay with me here. They tape these effing shows. Yes. That means that they can re-air them later. So what you would do in a television show is you would take old footage from years past, because again, Eddie no longer taking calls, and you show that this week,
yes,
so that people know what he's like,
yes,
what he's about.
Yes, I agree. It's one of those things where it's like, well, we want to keep invoking Eddie Guerrero, and everybody cheers for him, but we don't want to remind you that he's dead.
Yeah.
I'm gonna need Penta to take out Karrion Kross for taking out Masquerita Sagrada. I think we're gonna need to do that. Your turn, sir.
All right. I kind of thought this was a bit of a ho-hum week here, as we are going through things.
Let me amend that before you go into it. We are totally in. It's Royal Rumble season, so all we're doing is declaring and not really getting in fights, but putting on
Well, I was going with NXT.
Go ahead.
And my take here has kind of been, boy, they had some pretty banger shows in December, like both NXT and Raw.
Yeah.
And now as we are beginning the Mania build, we're really kind of coasting. And last week I went on a Mondo rant about it. Feel free to go and check that out. But Stephanie Vaquer and Shotzi Blackheart, this story continues to get worse and more dumb. And you would care about it if it meant anything in terms of how stupid it is. But it doesn't mean anything, so you don't care about it. But to kind of pick up on the bad management thread involving Ava last week, so she sets up this match. Then this match has a bunch of interference from the champion. And Ava's just like, well, I'm just going to let that stand. Well, I mean, I knew Shotzi was going to win, but it's like,
I'm mad that she won.
I'm mad that she won, too. Because
Shotzi, her positive is she's Sabu. Her negative is she's Sabu.
She's Sabu.
Yeah, I wouldn't have beaten Stephanie Vaquer that way for her first loss, necessarily. Although, has she lost before?
She beat Julia, right? Yeah, she beat Julia.
I don't think they had a one-on-one with Julia.
Oh, they didn't?
Did she? I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong on that. I don't know. It's just one of those things where I just won. She just won a number one contenders match and you beat her. Why?
Right.
I don't.
That was a pay-per-view event. She should be really upset over this. Shotzi should feel weird and icky to be getting the title. I mean, she should want the title shot but not feel great about it. And Vaquer's character should be very upset about it. I found the whole thing tedious. Speaking of tedious, just wanted to get one more in real quick here.
Go ahead.
I continue to think the Meta girls stink.
Really? I thought that tag team wasn't that tag team match wasn't bad. But it was mostly because of Kaylee Ray helping the other two.
Right. The Meta Girls stink. Jakara's not bad. Lash is trash. Like she has been, dude. Three weeks ago, they had one of the crappiest matches in NXT television all year. That tag match that the Meta Girls had a couple of weeks ago, where they couldn't pull off a single move seemingly without botching something, was a turd sandwich. And Lash has been in the system for a hot minute.
Okay, I'm not gonna deny that. I just think they're better than you give them credit for.
Well, no, I get that Booker likes Lash, but that doesn't make her any good.
I love Fraxium. They might be my favorite tag team right now. I'm going to love that DIY match when it comes about. I wish FTR were around to fight Fraxium, because I think that would be an all time banger. Because that would be new Rock and Roll Express versus Tully and Arn for me. I think that match would just absolutely slap. Your girl Kalani Jordan, secret heel.
Yeah. No, realizing that you can't win straight. That's a, she lost to Cora Jade. Characterization's still a little all over the place. The story is, I think, very simple.
Well, no, her story is she gets mad every time you mention Michigan State.
Right. Whereas I think the story is very simple with her. She was a standout her entire life. And so coming to terms with the idea that, you know, you were on this rocket curve and now you're plateauing, for someone who's always been achieving, plateauing feels like failing.
Yeah, no, I'm here for that. And they even took away your name.
Yeah.
I am going to give some flowers to the workhorse this week. That was Aunt Pam, who appeared on Raw, NXT, and SmackDown. She is the new Natty. I do not delude myself into thinking that she is ever going to be in the main event scene per se, but Hunter loves her. And she was in San Jose because that was her hometown, and to get over the merch. Unfortunately, time ran out on her angle with Roxanne at the end, but Roxanne is one of her girls. Aunt Pam has a posse in NXT, or she used to. That was a bunch of girls like Roxanne, JC Jane, Cora Jade, Kiana James, who's been missing in action for quite some time now. I'm a little worried about her, et cetera, et cetera. And she is now the new Natty. She is going to be the veteran who comes in there to put over the young girls, and that's fine. I thought she had a banger with Tiffany Stratton. They got a little bit lost in there, but Tiffany Stratton's tough, and so is Bayley, and they beat the crap out of each other last night on SmackDown.
Yeah, I really like Tiff. I she's such a good character. She's tough. She's game.
Yes.
She's super game for everything. And so I think her mindset, her already extant skill level, and the other tangibles that she has, she's a star. That's not like, you know, rocket analysis.
And Bayley gave her a match last night. It was I think two segments, and it wasn't an all timer, but God bless her. Bayley is just flying all over the country for this company to appear wherever and whenever. Your turn, sir.
Private Party are just absolute wet fart champions.
We
need to move. You know, we were talking about transitional champions earlier. We need to come up with a new term. I'm going with wet fart champions, where we try to belt this guy or this team. We're trying it aspirationally, and then it happens, and all we get is a wet fart. And that is exactly what Mark Quinn and Isaiah Cassidy, overcoming the odds against the Young Bucks, whenever that was, that's exactly what this is. No one cares about them. If they hadn't had Briscoe with them, I don't think they would have gotten a move. No, well, they wouldn't have gotten any crowd support. You know what I mean? Like one of the big problems is like the Hurt Syndicate are cool heels, which you and I definitely have agreed. I love the Hurt Syndicate. I hate that they're cool heels because it does put certain groups that work with them in this kind of nowhere land in terms of energy. See, Isaiah Cassidy and Mark Quinn, or even to a lesser extent, Mark Briscoe, where Mark Briscoe getting murdered death by Benjamin or Bobby Lashley should be something that we are upset about. But we think that Shelton and Bobby are so cool that it's kind of cool that they're kicking Mark Briscoe's ass. And that's the wrong reaction. That's not the reaction I should be getting with that. This guy lost his brother. We loved his brother. You know, like that's what I should be feeling.
Call them the gender champion?
Yeah.
I couldn't believe they did that. I watched it and I went, even Shelton had a weird look on his face afterwards. Like, that wasn't a great match. What were we doing there? Type of a thing. They were putting over MVP who hasn't put on the boots, quote unquote, in 2 years. And he's out there just killing guys with the offense and stuff. I'm just like, this is going to be a good segue for what the hell were we doing with Will Hobbs? In that match with John Moxley.
The Boar Horseman.
Because the story of that match was John Moxley is a champion who can take damage and withstand it and keep on coming back for more and only do a bit of the jangly leg drunken fighter selling and come back and more offense. If you are going to put over Will Hobbs, number one, you need to almost have him win in a three count.
He needs to break the bulldog choke.
He needs to break the bulldog choke. He needs to murder death these geeks who are on the outside trying to interfere the entire time. Hey, how about a DQ finish? Maybe if we didn't waste it with Christian and those geeks that nobody cares about with Hook and whatnot, we could have done a DQ. We could have
But the fans would turn against a disqualification finish, you see.
Tony hates DQ finish. Well, here's the other option you have. Count out. Let John Moxley be so frightened of what Will Hobbs is doing. Like, Will Hobbs was at his hottest, and I doubt you saw this, but on Collision last Saturday, they built the end of that show to make him an absolute monster. Like, he's not even clotheslining guys. He's just running down to the ring and blowing through people and doing it. And so that was the big angle to get over there. And so they start this match, and Will Hobbs should be Vader confident to me. He should just be like, I could take on
Vader dominant on Moxley to the point where Moxley actually steps back and is like, what the F is happening right now? Wait, what? Couple of times, Hobbs lays into him, hits him with a haymaker once or some equivalent of a haymaker, and Moxley has to step back and be like, holy shit, okay.
Yes, yeah, okay. Because what they did was they started the match, and Hobbs is looking around because Cesaro and Pac are at his back, and they may cheat or whatever. He shouldn't even be concerned about those guys.
Because he already has a game plan for that.
Yes. He should just go in and just punch John Moxley in the face and do it. But instead, this became like a CCW pretentious show where it's like, oh, look how much I can bleed out of my ear, and I'm making the guy look good, even though, again, the most selling he did was stumbling around for a couple seconds, and then he just came right back with more offense. I was visibly angry at this, and if I'm Will Hobbs, what they're gonna do is they're gonna give him like an easy cheap win on Wednesday.
Yeah,
or
it'll be Cesaro or Yuta. Like, he'll like clown Yuta on Wednesday, but you don't get the
chance to make a star in one night. And I'm not saying he should have won, but there should have been a 2.9 count at some point, and then Moxley's just like, F this, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
And then Moxley, we can save a match for a pay-per-view or something.
I actually have no problem with the idea that this is the man that Moxley's scared to fight, and just having that hang out there as a story beat. That Will Hobbs is a man who could be champion if Moxley wasn't scared to fight him.
Yes, and make the Moxley Death Riders thing an absolute fraud.
Yeah, right.
I'm
right.
The,
exactly.
I'm the baddest guy. I'm the baddest guy in the company.
Oh, I'm so tall. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What about Will Hobbs? Oh, I have no, oh. I got nothing to do with that. No,
I wasn't ready for Will.
Yeah,
Hobbs.
Right. Yeah.
Like, oh, I had a hamstring pull, or my ankle
was swelling heavily.
Oh, my arm.
Yeah.
Just you could make, but this is their problem with big guys because there's that little inkling in Tony's ear. Oh, they only do 3.5-star matches, and people may turn on them. It's like, God, just make a monster, dude. That's what
make
people want to see.
Make a monster that people like.
Yes.
That's the other. The idea that crowd attachment is dependent on star ratings is not actually based on reality. Let me tell you about a gentleman named Terry Hulk Hogan Bollea.
Really? No, don't bring that.
No, I obviously boo that man.
Boo that man.
But the reason we boo that man is because people liked him. And well, for many reasons, but like people liked him, and he never had a good match, hardly ever. Like 10 years at the top, 5 good matches.
Shout out to David Edwards for getting a call out on this show. Boo that man.
Boo that man.
Your turn, sir.
Oh my God. All right. What else do I have here to really kind of talk about? I mean, we kind of already did the AEW. Like, what are we doing on AEW is my problem. Brian Cage versus Kenny Omega. Kenny has not been on AEW TV in a match in forever. And I know this match is important because Tony Schiavone told me that this might actually be the most important match that they've ever had on Dynamite ever.
It's the most important night in the history of our sport.
The most important night in the history of our sport. Yes. Thank you, Tony. So, this should be important. Him returning should be a pretty big friggin' deal.
Yes.
And it should probably be the main event. Or, you know, like our sub-main event. Like, Omega returns, and then we get to Will Hobbs. Maybe if, you know, you were, you know, like, spicy, have Kenny Omega and Will Hobbs have an interaction backstage beforehand.
Yes.
Where Kenny Omega looks at Will Hobbs and says, I respect you. Go out there and get the job done tonight.
Yes. Take out the guys who took me out or whatever.
Yeah. Like nothing would make me happier tonight, Will, than to see you become champion. And nothing would make me happier after that than when I'm fully healthy to challenge you for that belt.
Can we just discuss aesthetics in wrestling for a moment?
Sure.
With Kenny Omega. Because I think Kenny Omega should be AEW's biggest star, number two behind Will Ospreay. He needs a better theme song and a better Titantron. He needs, and look, WWE does this fantastic. I need to know within the first beat that he's coming out because he's my big star and I want all the people to get out on their feet. He needs a Cena, Stone Cold, CM Punk.
And you want to know what's funny? His style of music that he likes, or his main compositional motif that he's been tapping into in recent years, ever since the One Winged Angel theme, which is Final Fantasy VII, has been Mega Man. And Mega Man is littered with compositions that get you right out the chute. If he went back to the musical touchstone that his current theme song is based off, which is kind of like a little take on Dr. Wily or like some other Mega Man 2 things, you got a lot of really good examples of what he should be going with or the type of theme that he needs. He needs something like a Flash Man.
And it needs to be bright.
Something that like hits you right out the gate.
Instead, it's like this dark, brooding music with...
It builds and builds and builds. Like, I feel like builds in music are a thing that wrestlers think have so much more mileage than they actually do in reality. Because, like, the crowd is pumped. Do you really want them to go flat so that you can crescendo them back up to where they were?
The build takes too long in too many wrestling theme songs, and this was a problem I found out way back in the 80s when they were using Bad Company's Bad Company for Bad Company, the tag team. And, you know, it starts out with that sloping out dun to dun to dun. But the point it gets to is when it goes, you know, Bad Company, you know, gets to the chorus type thing. And that's the part. And they finally figured that out and started just starting the music right, at that
yeah,
point.
Yeah.
And the problem is people think that the builds, you know, less and then the anticipation. I feel the same way about Hook's theme song. I feel the same. Yeah. It's one of those things where it's like, no, you need the hook.
Well, you have the long entrance and the quick entrance, and you can't let the quick entrance suffer at the expense of the long entrance.
Yeah, but
Kenny
I mean,
Omega does not need to be announced from North Carolina every single time.
Yeah, no, I understand. But I understand. But it was, I mean, that was more heel Kenny to me. It's one of those things where like it was so pretentious that it was just like over the top. Etc. But yes, bright, happy music, bright, happy Titantron. I don't need the fire for Kenny Omega unless it's like, you know, his is the fire of the Phoenix versus the fire of cleansing or something like that. Yeah. I don't care. It's just one of those things where it's just like, if he's my top baby face, I want the entire presentation to be top baby face. Thought the match was okay. I mean, it wasn't a usual Brian Cage, I got to play all my hits before I get pinned type of a thing. And I just think
Brian Cage looks noticeably like in the last couple of months here, it feels like he's aged 5-6 years.
I would agree. He looks
noticeably older.
And I just don't think the Callis family are the top heel act, and that's who you want to put them against. I get the story aspect of it, but to me, if the Death Riders are your top heel group, boom, go there. But instead we got Will and Kenny doing the same. Just, we've been doing this stupid Callis family.
I know. And the idea that, like, I think the mistake here's always been that Don Callis needs a faction rather than Don Callis just needs to have hired guns that go up against Kenny. And when you want to finally pivot out of this, one of his hired guns is finally like, you know what? You suck. I'm going to leave you to Kenny and like leaves Callis in the ring with Kenny. And that's the end of the story, which is a story that probably should have been done a year ago, two years ago.
The positive that they acted like a family this time. The problem was for me, Fletcher is the alpha in the family. And he was the first one out as opposed to Takeshita, who became kind of the alpha by virtue of coming out last. I would have reversed those. You have Takeshita come out, start beating on Kenny. Will comes out, starts being, and then the Protostar comes out. I love that name, the Protostar. It's just those little things you think about. I have one last thing for AEW, if you don't mind.
Okay, yeah, hit me.
MJF and Jeff Jarrett. I like both these performers sometimes. I did not like them here. Too much fourth wall breaking. You know who knows that MJF is dating Alicia Atout? 12 people. And so we're trashing that. Jeff Jarrett's the baby face, but he's no selling insults, making MJF go into further into his bag of scumbag tricks and being even more dark until he gets somewhere, which was a bad move.
Boy, Jeff should have sold
a little at least. Yeah.
I think this is really important as a babyface here. A bit of hurt, especially after you go after his wife. Tears that morph into anger. Like, oh, you want to say that?
Okay. I am so sick of people saying that as opposed to everybody said that to me.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, everyone calls my wife a slut. Whatever. That's not the right reaction if you actually love your wife.
Yes. That's not my legacy and that's not who I am. And I love my wife. Damn it. She's not Kurt Angle's ex-wife anymore. She's my wife and I love her and I won't have you talk about that type of thing.
Yeah.
This thing went 14 minutes. I've never seen Jeff Jarrett look that old. I don't understand. I mean, the shooty comments, I get. You know, nobody's ever cared about you. You never drawn a dime, blah, blah, blah. I think one of the reasons I was so down on it was while I was at work this week, I put on, there's a guy who makes compilations of various feuds, and they had the compilation of the Midnight Express versus Arn and Tully. And those promos by Arn and Tully, they towed the breaking the fourth wall line, but they never broke the fourth wall line about partying together and how Arn would have to talk to a woman for Bobby Eaton in order for him to get there, things like that. But it existed in this kayfabe world.
Right, right. It's based on reality, but no one's like, yeah, and Bobby, whenever we'd go to you and you'd always have the extra perishables, like the deodorant and the two, like no one cares.
Yeah, just you're calling MJF's mom a call girl and just like, no.
That was so, what kind of baby face? I do not care if somebody's mother works as a sex worker. What kind of baby face brings up that somebody's mother had to do sex for money? That's just not baby face behavior. Oh, well, it's true. Yes, there are lots of things that are true that you're an asshole for saying.
Yeah, right.
You say someone has a big nose and they have a big nose. Oh, it's true. That doesn't inoculate you from being a prick.
Yeah, segment.
MJF's mom was a sex worker. Jarrett shouldn't be saying that.
And this kept going and going and going. And I'm like, when is this thing going to end? When is somebody actually going to trigger somebody and doing something about it? And then it became that. I like MJF grabbing Karen. I like the cheap heat of that. Don't get me wrong. But man, they did a close-up of Jeff Jarrett. And let me tell you something. In high definition and 4K, I've never seen him look older. And I love Jeff Jarrett.
This is a man who desperately needs some Botox right now. If we're gonna make him regularly featured on camera, we need to smooth that face out a little bit.
Let's give him the mid-card title win and let him go. I think he'll be a great presence backstage. I liked the Dustin promo too a little bit, although my kingdom for an audio person who knows, hey, you need to get the boom mic in there so you can hear the first part of Dustin's promo as he's walking into the scene. They made him.
My kingdom for someone who understands what blocking is.
That
in
too.
This company.
I mean, the blocking's not great either, but that's all I have for most things. Although I you know what? I watched SmackDown. So if you can indulge me.
Yeah.
There's that tag division is pretty stacked. Between the Garzas, DIY, the Motor City Machine Guns, Pretty Deadly, the Street Profits. They're putting on some bangers on that show.
I know. I know. And people, I was going to say, it's not even that nobody's watching them because SmackDown's still getting good numbers. It's just if you're not a regular SmackDown viewer, you're not a regular SmackDown viewer right now. Ever since the Bloodline's been gone, people aren't watching SmackDown as canon.
And I mean,
even though it should be, it's not being watched like that.
I do wonder what's going on with Carmelo Hayes and how to reclimate that. I mean, he had a good match, but then he got beat down by the Bloodline last night because he applauded them beating down. I think it was it LA Knight? Oh, and one other thing. That Io Sky, was it Io Sky and Lyra Valkyria match on Raw? It was Dakota Kai. It was Dakota Kai.
Yeah, they have wonderful.
Those are tough.
They have
too.
Great. I've been ever increasing on Lyra. I think she's very good.
Yes, she is my most improved.
Yeah, right. Right. Just let it. Lest anyone think that I'm always just going, oh, they're trash. They're no good. They're trash. No, I see people improve too. Lyra's a very classic example of this.
The weird bird gimmick is less so.
Yep.
She can cut a promo. She can work in there. I mean, Dakota Kai will bump like a champ. And that suplex off the apron onto the floor.
What a spot.
That was
a spot of the show for me on Monday night.
That was mine, too. I felt bad because as I'm wrapping up the Lazy River, I'm like, oh, I didn't mention that. And I'm giving it short shrift, and I shouldn't because those two – I feel bad for Dakota Kai, but I think she understands her role in WWE, and it's not like a personal thing, but boy.
No, it's a timing thing with her. I mean,
yes,
Dakota is my age. Hey, how you doing, Dakota? And at this point, you know, the company's got other priorities here, and younger talents like Tiffany Stratton and stuff like that. And Dakota's still good, and they know they can get a great match out of her, and she's very much...
She's reliable, is what she's not injured. She's reliable.
When she's not injured, she's great. When she's not injured, she's always delivering in the ring. Still
a top five heel turn for me in WWE was her turn with War Games there.
Great one. And I think ultimately to her being buddy buds with Bayley, and the fact that she's a good character.
Yes.
Like, Bayley and her could later on go to a more character heavy sort of tag thing and work very economically and still deliver a very entertaining mid-card match.
She has
like that
weird thing where she can be slight but also vicious at the same time. Candice LeRae is kind of pulling that out now in on SmackDown. And yeah, it's really good. We've gone a little long. Let's go into the Lazy River. Yes, Ayumi Kurihara and Kana versus Mako Satomura.
We call this Vader Club, not the Lazy River Part 2.
And Yako Hamada, yes.
let's go back to the
Lazy River. Eddie Guerrero's no longer taking calls. So you can't really book him.
Yeah, but, you know, apparently they actually tape all these shows.
I had been watching a lot of Kana and Mako, and I just couldn't bring myself to give Chris a 30-minute match where there was nothing like sitar playing the entire time during the match. I also have a strong like of Ayako Hamada from her days in TNA, teaming with Awesome Kong. Unfortunately, the teams that she would fight would be like the Beautiful People, but I always, like, my dream match at one time was like Awesome Kong and Hamada versus Bayley and Sasha at their peak. I was a big fan of hers in TNA. But yes, to watch this is to watch Kana and Mako Satomura slap and kick the crap out of each other.
Mako's kicks, man.
God!
Her kick form is so good.
And crisp.
Yeah.
And it always makes a sound. It never does the thud. I mean, in terms of if she's slapping the leg or not. I really didn't watch close enough to do that. But you got to take some... The thing I love about this is, like, Kana and Mako are both rebels of that Japanese women's scene. You know, screw you, Rossi. We're going to go do our own thing over here. And if you get in the ring with them, you're going to have to bang because they are not going to lay it off. Like, the ending of this match is just, you know, slam, kick, 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 finally pin, you know, or like three power bombs in a row until I finally pin your ass. Is it the best tag match I've ever seen out of any of these people? No, of course not. But it was just one of those things where I wanted to focus on Kana and Mako Satomura because
I'm sure we said this before, but we're not curating these, especially at this point, based on like, these are our favorite best matches of all time. It's more, here's what I was interested in this week. Yeah. Here's why. And take a look at it.
Here's what I'm in the mood for. And Mako Satomura's wrestling. I believe she wrestled her last match in Germany last night. I've seen some younger stuff of her. I may pick another one. I have a Vader Club in mind for my next pick in 2 weeks, and it's actually Vader, so I'm going to keep it under wraps. But this is worth seeking out. It's got, you know, 20 minutes of your time, but it's a young Kana. It's not 40-year-old mature in her bag Kana. I think it's actually right before she signed with WWE. But yeah, no, the kicks were sharp. The slaps also got me. Like, there was no quarter on these slaps. I was afraid that Kana was concussed at one point, Chris. I will warn people about that.
Yeah. No, great match. Great match. I knew what I was looking for, and the parts where Mako's in with Kana
I didn't think Hamada was that bad, to be honest with you.
I didn't think anyone else was bad per se. It's just that, like, the match always elevated.
Yes.
Every time it was Mako and Kana.
Everybody stood up, and you could hear the vocalness every time they got back in there together because you just knew it's banger time here.
They wanted more. After the first exchange, people were basically kind of waiting for the rest of that match for that next spin around of Mako and Kana.
Do you know what neighborhood we might be visiting for next week? Forgot. I have cancer surgery possibly on Thursday. We'll see if we do a show, but I should be okay. I was okay last time. Do you know what neighborhood we might be in for Vader?
Oh, we are still hanging out in Bockwinkelville here this coming week.
Okay,
here.
The
celebration of Nick Bockwinkel continues. I enjoy the living hell out of this guy. Like, I watched a whole bunch more after we did the last Vader Club. The promos are great. I was talking to you about how, or I messaged you. I love that he captures this essence that, like, the belt is relevant to him only because it says that he's the best, a thing that he already knows.
Yes.
It just makes it clear for all you simpletons that he's the best. And there's money that comes with it too, you see, you dopes. But that's actually all that I find something deeply, like, authentic and compelling about Bockwinkel's, like, heel champion thing. And I love his matches. I think he's a hell of a worker.
Oh yeah, we'll see what happens next week. We'll see if I'm here. You can follow me at CrapGame13 on X. Jeff Hawkins at Blueski, if you so choose. I also do a show over on, what's it called? Fight Game Media, called The Dynamite Show, about 20 minutes after Paul Fontaine and I go live on YouTube. Drops in your audio podcast catchers the next day. If you just want to follow Shake Them Ropes, I'd appreciate it. It's Shake Them Ropes, all one word, on X. I just update Vader Club when I can and when the show comes out. That way you don't have to listen to my bad jokes. Chris is on Instagram. He doesn't do bad jokes over there. It's DOC.
I barely do anything over there at this point.
DOCTOR_NOV. But I'll let him get his plugs in right now.
Yeah, the king of social media, Chris Novembrino. Please follow me on Instagram.
Look, I heard Red Book was pretty good. Have you watched some more Chinese spyware on your phone?
Oh, my God. No, I was talking with Oliver about that. He's like, oh, I'm installing that on my phone. I'm like, don't do it.
Don't do it. Taylor Lorenz, don't do it.
I'm not gonna be, oh, I'm uninstalling that crap. I'm like, no, don't, that it's a bad idea. Let's talk more about propaganda when you get a chance. we'll talk a little bit more later after work while we're smoking. Yeah, follow me on Instagram for now. Dr. No, follow the Spotify, please. I hope to get some more stuff up there. I mean, things are being worked on, so it's really a matter of time and health more than anything before the next batch of recordings comes out up on Spotify. You know what? Go and rewatch The Village by M. Night Shyamalan this week. It's better than you remember.
Hello, everyone. My name is Taylor.
And I'm Kelly.
And we are the co-hosts of Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. Episodes drop every other Monday, where we discuss the biggest Joshi news, review shows, and preview the hottest upcoming Joshi action.
So whether you're a new fan or an old fan, we've got something here for you at Jumping Bomb Audio.
Check us out on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.